Production. Recorded live.
You are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's episode 26 of the Geocaching Podcast. I've got a couple people on the podcast with me tonight, so I'd like to welcome everybody. Go ahead and introduce yourself, guys.
This is Daryl W4.
I'm Firefly03.
And we also have Geek Boy from Illinois and Mantu Ryder, but I don't know if they're able to talk right now. So those are people that are on the podcast right now. If you guys want to call in today, our number is 724-444-7444. And the TalkCast ID is 7525. And just go ahead and use the PIN geocache 01 or 02. That'll get you on the show today, and we can talk about whatever we want to talk about. But we have a few things we are going to talk about today. But first, I want to remind you guys that this podcast tonight is sponsored by GoToMeeting. If you waste hours in traffic trying to get to your clients' offices and spend more time getting there than actually doing your job or the meeting, then that's not a very productive way, and there is an easier, more affordable way to do that, and that's GoToMeeting. And just log on to GoToMeeting.com, start your meetings instantly, and everyone sees your computer on their computer screen. It's kind of like meeting in person, but less expensive, less time-consuming, and you can hold time or meetings just real quick and for a flat rate. You can meet in your office, your hotel room, anywhere, anytime. And you can try it for free for 45 days. Just go to gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast. And you can try gotomeeting.com for 45 days for free. So anyways, welcome to the show, guys. I see Mantu Ryder has called in. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be on.
Today, what's going on with you, Daryl? Anything new since we hung out last time?
Well, this weekend we ran out to Midland, Michigan area looking to place an Earth cache, so that was a little bit different experience for me. Had a lot of fun, got I think only about 15 or 16 caches en route because it's 2-plus hours away. But we didn't get up until like 1 in the morning, so we were beaten the next day.
I got to do a few caches this weekend too, although I only hit 3. My wife was hanging out with some college friends, and so I took my son out, and we went geocaching, and we hit 3. We had a bunch of bugs we had to deliver. We both still had our red Jeep bugs that we had to get rid of. I know I have to admit it. I held them longer than 2 weeks, and I was really starting to feel guilty because I really had every cache that I'd done between the time I got the bugs and when I released them this past week were all small caches except for ones that were on our run. But we didn't really have time to drop bugs off on our run. So I didn't have any caches that I could hit that were big enough to put the Jeep travel bugs in. So
yeah, that's going to be a big problem with the travel bugs lately, too.
Yeah, it seems like everyone is going about putting the micros in place. But we made sure we hit them. We actually both dropped our Jeeps off in one cache. And so whoever finds that next time is going to be lucky because I'll be able to have two red Jeeps that they can grab.
So which cache was that now?
It was a cache around our area. I forget what it was actually called. I can get it here in a minute for you. But we hit one. It's actually a new it wasn't a new cache, but I thought it was a new cache at first because when I hit it, the logbook was blank. And so I thought for sure that we were going to be the first to find on it. But then when I got back, I realized that they had just put a clean log in it. And it kind of disappointed me because I really wanted to be the first to find.
Yeah, there's nothing like that feeling of the FTF.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it wasn't. The cache that we hit was called, it was called Big Fallen Tree. And the GC number on it is GC12YRC. So that was the cache that we hit and placed our bugs in. So, and we also hit a virtual, which I love hitting the virtuals. There's just something about them. Then you don't see too many of them around anymore since you can't place new ones. So,
mm-hmm.
But Daryl, you brought to my attention today, and I've heard it on the Podcaster podcast, but about a new GPSR that's coming out from Magellan. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Yeah, you know, I always love when we hear about all these cool new technology products, and we just barely missed this one last week. They just announced on Monday. I didn't find out about it until, like, Wednesday-ish. But Magellan's coming out with a whole series of GPSRs, and they do have a little bit of information about on their website right now, but they're called the Triton series. And they start with the base level one, which is a 200, and go all the way up to the 2000, and they're they got some interesting features. All of them are color. All of them have the improved chipsets, the SURF chipsets, so faster acquisition and a little bit better accuracy.
Well, that's cool. I've noticed when I was looking at the publication for it today that they have touch screens, at least on the biggest unit.
Yeah,
and
no, the base level unit doesn't include the touch screen. That's just the keypad. And the base level unit's only a 2.2-inch display. The higher-end unit, which this thing is cool, it's a 2000, goes all the way up with the touchscreen, which is a 2.7-inch display. It has an LED flashlight built in. Does audio playback and recording. Very nice when you want to take those little voice notes in the field. And it has a camera.
That's really cool. It sounds like it's almost going to be that all-in-one device that we've been looking for a long time.
Yeah, it's getting really close, but there's still a few key items missing, like the Bluetooth connectivity. You know,
mm-hmm.
If you get the Bluetooth connectivity going where I can talk through, like, my cell phone, it's not going to be everything that I want, because I'd really like that live. You know, I love logging through the WAP interface. I want that kind
mm-hmm.
of live gratification to get and receive information live.
Yeah, that would be nice. And another problem that we just discussed, and you brought it to my attention, I didn't even think about it, but a lot of the Earth caches now or are requiring you to take pictures of your GPS at the location with you in a picture. How is that going to be possible if you use the camera on the GPS?
Yeah, you're going to have to walk around with a giant mirror or something so that you can point the GPS at the mirror and take the picture of yourself in the mirror.
Yeah, and I bet people are going to really look at you funny then.
Yeah, maybe we just need to stencil in some kind of exemption if you have the Triton 2000, which is the only one that has the camera. You know,
mm-hmm.
then you can just take a picture of yourself at arm's length.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I hope we get a demo unit to try here at the Geocaching Podcast so we can try this out and see how it is and give our listeners a review of the actual unit.
Yeah, well, we've both signed up for the reviewers unit, so hopefully we'll see one of these things. Same
yes.
with that cool Bushnell one, that Onyx, I'm forgetting the model number now. I think it was a 400. But
I think so, too.
Whenever I get either one of those in, I'm going to try to put together a nice little review and some videos, and hopefully I'll have those ready to submit to Ice and Rye within a week or so of receiving the units.
Yeah, that'd definitely be cool. I haven't heard anything back from Bushnell yet about that unit either. So
yeah.
I don't know if they're in production yet or not.
Well, I would assume that they're in production. I know that they had some delivery issues that they were working on, so I don't believe any of these have been delivered yet. Now,
I gotcha.
Yeah, the Tritons, I'm going to skim the press release real quick because I forgot what it had said, but I believe they're looking at September release on these things. Now, the other cool thing that I should mention, too, is that these things are also going to support National Geographic maps.
That is definitely cool. That's something I'm interested to see if we can get our hands on it. I want to see that.
Yeah, you know, the better the units, or the better the maps, the better everything is, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we want to mention probably the price points, and we're looking at the 200 base level version is going to be about $129. And
that's really not too bad, though.
No, that's that's comparable to any of the other low-end units, really, and you're getting color, so you know,
mm-hmm.
you're right about the same spot. And then the high-end unit is going to retail for $499. Now, I imagine that they're all going to have discounts once they hit the street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not
yeah.
seeing the date in here, just skimming through the article real quick, but I want to say that it's September is their estimated delivery.
Those prices aren't too bad, though. I mean, even for that, I mean, they're comparable to anything else that the Garmin has going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, granted,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, granted, Gartman doesn't have the audio recording and playback and camera and all that good stuff like that.
Right. Now, yeah, and if you want to go for the Triton 1500, that one's only going to be $399, and basically the only thing it looks like you're going to be losing is the camera itself and the flashlight.
That's really not too bad. I mean, it'd be nice to have all of those things while you're geocaching, but if you want to save some money, I would say you could probably go with that fairly easily and not lose too much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and personally, I wouldn't go for anything less than that 1500 just because I really love the touchscreen and the bigger LCD.
Mm-hmm.
The 1500 is the one that jumps up to the touchscreen and 2.7-inch. The 500 is another $150 less, but you lose that touchscreen and you don't have the voice recording. You know, it just loses a lot of that stuff that I really liked.
Mm-hmm. The stuff that makes it jump out and be that geocaching unit that we're really looking for.
Right, right. It's not a compelling enough upgrade to go to something like the 500, in my opinion. But one of the things that even the 500 has is they have a really great electronic compass in the Magellan units. We have the 600 Explorer 600 that we actually stopped using because we have so many problems with the USB on it. And hopefully they've got a better USB chip in these too. But the compass was incredible. They've got this great three-axis compass, which means it doesn't matter if it's being held level or not. You can hold it any way you want, and it still knows which direction is north.
That's cool.
That is very, very nice. It actually makes that electronic compass very usable.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely. Our main topic tonight is geocaching safety, something that I think we a lot of times take for granted as we're geocaching. We don't always think about all of the ways that we can be safe and how it's necessary to be safe, especially when we're trying to get out there and get the cache first or, you know, get high numbers or even just regular caching. I think sometimes we forget about geocaching safety. So I want to bring up, we've got a handful of things that we want to talk about tonight, just about different ways that we can be safe. And the first thing that I'm going to bring up is the geocache with a buddy. It's something we don't always think about doing because a lot of times we, at least I know myself, I like doing it with a group and by myself because it is nice to get out and kind of be alone in the forest and just take some time to where it's quiet and there's no one around. This is an important thing because that way if you run into any trouble, if you fall down, you just get lost or anything like that, you're not going to be alone because you're going to have a buddy. They can help you if they can run back to the car and get, you know, some help or you know, whatever they need to do. Plus, a lot of times geocaching is more fun with your family and friends because that way you have stories that you can share back and forth. I know every time that I cache with my friends, it is a lot more fun because we still tell stories about what was going on, you know, back when we hit a certain cache. So that's always something that we want to take into consideration is geocache with a buddy. What other things do you think, Daryl, that we should look out for as far as safety?
Well, one of the big things that I always really drive home is that you really should have some type of cell phone with you whenever you go out, whether it's as a group or not. You know, at least one person in your group needs to have that cell phone, because if something happens and you're a mile away from the closest car or phone or anything, you're going to have some trouble.
Yeah.
You know, make sure that you have that phone, and make sure that you've also told someone where you're going to be and when you're expected back, and that way when you get out there and decide that you want to hit another four or five caches, you can give them a call and they don't have to panic either.
Yeah. Now, the only downside of that is with your cell phone is if you're in an area that doesn't have any cell service.
Absolutely. So, you can always get the satellite phones. You just don't want to pay for the service.
Yeah, that pretty much run your bank account pretty dry.
It does indeed. Now, the other thing, though, is make sure to bring the water. We had talked about that kind of stuff back in our caching in the heat, but water. You really want to bring that along, no matter whether it's winter or summer. You're going to need to hydrate.
Mm-hmm. Dree or Montu Rider, do you have any other any other hints or stuff right away that you want to chime in here and say the ways to be safe?
Well, definitely, this is Montu Ryder. Definitely on the cell phone is definitely a must. I had one incident where I was going after a cache called Starkey Strait, and I actually ran almost right on top of a 10-foot diamondback rattlesnake. Luckily, I also had a walking stick, which definitely I feel is a must when geocaching, especially here in Florida where I'm at, because the snake actually struck at the walking stick. If I hadn't have had that, it would have been my leg, and then that cell phone definitely would have come in handy because I was at least a mile away from any help that could have gotten to me.
Ow.
Yeah.
That comes into my suggestion, too, is really be aware of your surroundings. The best way to protect yourself is to keep it from happening. Watch where you're going. Make sure your nose is not at the compass all the time. Watch for the branches that are hanging down. Watch for the rocks. Watch for the possibility of where a snake might be. Always try being on the defensive area.
That reminds me, too, just for our people maybe who are newer at geocaching, too, like Dree said, don't concentrate so hard on your GPS because a lot of times you might get lost, too, because you're so concentrating on your GPS that you have no idea what is around you. And if you lose satellite reception and you don't realize that, you're not going to be able to get back out. And you can't always expect to have your GPS being accurate and being able to lead you back to the car. So use some basic tips, it's like you would if you didn't have your GPS. Make sure you know what is around you, know your landmarks, and so you know how to get back out if you can.
Yeah, and you always want to make sure that you have some way out, whether it's compass, map, or whatever, you know, just in case something does happen to your GPS. But you know, remember to bring the spare batteries. And if you're using the rechargeables, make sure they're charged.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We have a friend of ours who was telling stories about that. He went out with a buddy of his kayaking, or canoeing actually, this last weekend. All of his batteries were dead.
Oh, no.
So they were working off one GPS, and that one GPS was getting bad readings.
That's another thing, too, especially if you're going to be going out where you're either heading out during the night before it gets dark, or even if you might think you might be out longer than you expect, take a flashlight. If you don't have a flashlight, sometimes turning the backlight of your GPS up all the way is a nice little tip, too. But bring a flashlight and extra batteries for the flashlight, too.
Now, I would also say, too, make sure to keep an eye on the weather, too, and dress appropriately. Look, if you're going to be doing a long trip, make sure you look at the weather before you go, what it's projected to be like, not just what it is right now. Because you may be dressed for, you know, 90-degree heat, and a storm comes up, and you end up all wet, and you don't have anything extra with you. But on the same hand, you don't want to go out in that 90-degree heat expecting it to rain, and it doesn't rain, and you're dressed all day for 90-degree or for rain. You're going to get really hot and really sweaty, and you're going to get over – you're going to exasperate your body really quickly, and you're going to get dehydrated. So definitely keep an eye on the weather and dress appropriately. Another thing, too, is if you move the foliage when you're in the city or woods, check for ticks when you get back home. Ticks are something that we sometimes take for granted. I have to admit it, but I don't like ticks at all. I'm almost scared of ticks. Every time I'm out, I come home and I say, when I'm geocaching, I say, Julie, check me for ticks. Julie, check me for ticks, because I don't like the idea of any tick being on me at all. So ticks can bring disease. So that is something that I would say also check for when you get back from your times out geocaching.
One thing, too, about the ticks, I don't know if anybody really knows a lot about them, but one of the things is they will crawl around your body for about an hour after they're on you, and they'll go to areas of most heat, like armpits, behind the ears, the backs and the knees, areas like that. So those are the places that you're going to really want to keep an eye on for.
We had a really good tip come in, too, with our geocaching gadget contest at the Cachemaniacs, which is if you use a lint roller when you first come out of the woods, all of those little ticks that are just crawling around will get stuck to the lint roller. So it's a really good way to get the ticks that you might not even see.
I would have never thought of that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that until I got that great tip, and I wish I had that email up in front of me right now to give this cashier credit, but yeah, that was a really good tip.
Mm-hmm. I would also say, too, when you're in the woods, there's a couple things you need to do. Wear good walking or hiking shoes for the woods or when you're walking long distance. And I've noticed this when we did our cache run a couple weeks ago. By the end of that time, man, I did not expect to do all the walking that I did, but in one spot, we walked probably 4 miles. And by the time I got home, man, my legs were killing me. And so I would say definitely if you're going to be hiking or you're going to be in the woods, definitely wear good shoes that won't hurt your feet too long and plan on that. Also, like Montu Rider said, carry a walking stick for exploring your holes or brush, and it's also good for stability or like he said too, fending off animals. A lot of times I know that a lot of good places for hiding geocaches are in holes, which are also good places for animals. So I would use the hiking stick and maybe in your flashlight, like Dree said, to look in the place where you think the geocache might be, especially if you're not obviously doing it in the urban and you're out in the woods. Look before you stick your hand somewhere. You never want to get it bitten. So I would say that. And also, watch for poison ivy and poison oak. Not everyone is allergic to it, but be watchful for it because you don't want to get that. My dad gets it pretty bad when he gets it. And so I would say, know what it looks like. Know what you're looking for. Don't grab it. Don't get anywhere near it. And I would say, if you can, wear long pants, too. That way you can keep your legs, if you're walking in the woods, from getting poison ivy or anything like that would hurt your legs.
One thing that Darrow and I use after we go into a woods and come out, especially if we know there's poison ivy there, is an ivy cleanse. And what that is it's actually like a little wet nap that's specific for poison ivy, poison oak, and poison sumac that actually gets the residues off of you so that you don't actually get the rash. The other thing I want to point out, too, and to remind everybody, that poison ivy, just because you're not allergic to it this year, does not mean you're not going to get it next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then something else along those same kind of lines is to avoid bushwhacking. If you stay on the trails, you don't have to deal so much with the thorns, the poison ivy and whatnot, because it's been beaten down. And the other thing is, it's safer for the environment because you're not beating a new trail.
Now, I have to interject a comment here, too. The cache is one of the caches that me and my son did this past weekend. There was a trail back there, and it was around this little lake-type thing, and we had to walk around the lake. And when we got back there, I didn't even realize, but there was a branch that had a thorn in it. It was sticking down, and I actually got it in his arm, and he's only 19 months. And I was trying to get it out, and I was trying to convey to him that, I know it hurts, son, but you have to let me get this out because it'll hurt more if you don't. I finally got it out, and it was actually kind of funny because when he came home, I said, Micah, tell Julie about your caching trip that you just had. And he said, ouchie, ouchie, and pointed to his arm. And and so that was pretty funny. I had to laugh because that's all he thought about the whole time about the caching trip is his arm getting ouchy. And another thing, my wife actually just walked in and held up a sign, and she said, also, don't wear flip-flops. We were out, and we didn't even think about this, but we were out because we went caching one time, and we knew that there was, like, trails in a local park, and she had a big thorn that actually got stuck up into her foot, a big thorn. So watch out for those on the trail. That was one of those things that we didn't think would happen because we were walking on the trail. We weren't walking, we weren't bushwhacking. We were just walking on the trail, and so we had to stop and have a ranger clean her foot up because we didn't have anything to clean it up with. So definitely don't wear flip-flops when you're caching.
Yeah, that's one of those select pieces of footwear I don't recommend even for urban caching.
No, Definitely not. And we don't anymore. Now we both wear shoes. But that was one of those times we didn't even think, because we knew we were going to – it's a local park that's pretty much across the street from our house. And we knew that they have trails, and we knew that we weren't really even going off the trail. But apparently there was a big thorn on the ground. So definitely watch out for those things. And another thing, too, and this – I'd never think of this until I'm in the woods almost lost and have to follow my breadcrumb back. But if – set a waypoint where your car is at so you know how to get back to your car, because either way, even if your GPS – runs out of batteries, or if you're walking a long way and your bread trail gets eaten back up, you'll actually be able to find your car. And that's one of those things that I forget.
Yeah,
I
don't tend to do that myself. It's one of those nasty habits I probably should get out of. I do it when we go out on the long trips through a big park, but littler ones I don't bother with. But, you'd think I'd learn, because so many of our interviewees tell stories about having lost their car when they're out caching.
Mm-hmm. And I think we take it for granted, because I think we think that we have the GPS. We'll just follow the bread trail back, and you get so turned around. I mean, I've been in small parks that I end up getting lost in, because I honestly don't have a good sense of direction. I'd probably get lost going to and from work if I didn't have my GPS. And that's sad, because I pretty much take one road to get to my work. But seriously, I get turned around real easy, and I know that for me, I hardly ever said it, but I need to remember it too.
Yeah, well, you never know when you're going to drop your GPS in the lake,
Yeah.
You always need some way to find your way back.
Or smash your screen when you drop it on a rock or something.
Yeah, but if you still only have one GPS, that's not going to do you any good, because you may have a waypoint, but if you can't see your screen because it's in the lake or smashed.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, that's when the compass and map comes in handy.
That's true.
Which, of course, I don't think any of us on the phone right now probably carry.
Actually, you carry a compass.
Yeah, she does carry the compass, but we never take the map.
Yes.
I have a compass. I have one of those, safety whistle things that have the orange things that have, a waterproof container thing in them, and then also a compass on the top, but it's a cheap compass. I don't really think that it'll do me much good, but it might. I've never had to use it, so.
Who was it that was telling us her compass was backwards?
Nurse Nana.
Yeah, Nurse Nana, in her interview, was telling us she had a compass that was backwards, so she kept trying to walk the wrong way.
That's never good.
Yeah,
no.
If you have a compass, make sure the compass actually works.
But that, from Nurse Nana, that doesn't surprise me.
No,
sure.
No, she has such great stories.
Yep, I really enjoyed hearing her talk on your podcast.
Well, and she's even better in person.
Yeah,
is she?
She's a lot more bubbly. She was very, very nervous for the podcast, but she did good.
Yeah, we're anxious to get out and actually cache with her and her crew that she normally goes out with, because the stories that come back from those trips are just stellar.
They sound like it. Another thing that I always do is I have a hat that I dub my geocaching hat, but I would say always wear a hat, and that's to protect from the sun, branches, ticks, and etc. You can always use your hat for things you don't think of, like you can get spider webs out of the way. You can do, well, if you do that, I wouldn't recommend wearing it again for a while until you wash it, but you can do that. You can keep it on your head, keep the sun out, keep the ticks out. That's something that I always wear. Now, I guess if you wear a Tilly hat like Sunny does, you could use it for things like self-defense, so I hear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, and you can always go to that YouTube video to check that out.
Yeah, that one is funny. I'll have to find a link to put in our show notes. But, yeah, that is definitely a funny video.
Oh, absolutely.
But another thing, too, is wear sunblock in the sun. I a lot of times bring it, but a lot of times I forget to wear it, and then I come back burnt. So definitely wear sunblock in the sun. Any other ideas, guys?
Well, you always want to make sure that the waypoints that you have entered are actually correct. You can always run into that situation where you go out for the cache and find that it's down the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
If you're caching with a group, 10-foot rule. Watch out for the person in front of you, especially if it's Daryl. He has a habit of letting go of the branches and have them smack in my face.
Yeah, that's the only one, though.
No, there's another one, and if he's listening, he knows who he is.
That's never good. I think I do that, too, because I just want to get to the cash, and a lot of times I forget about the people around me. But and a couple other last things, guys. One thing I would say too is remember that not all caches are worth going for. Someone may have planted it, and it may be a good cache, but they just may not have really thought about it when they put it out. If you have to go anywhere close to a road where you're going to be in danger of the road, or you know, use your good judgment. I've said this before on the show. Caches, it's not worth your life for caching. I mean, most everyone here, I'm sure, is addicted to geocaching, but it's not worth your life. If you just use your common sense, if you don't think it's a wise idea to go for it, don't go for it. It's not, like I said, it's not worth being dead over finding a geocache. And sometimes people that play some have all good intentions, but sometimes they don't think through everything. They just want to place the cache. So that's my final tip as far as safety. Do you guys have any other final tips?
No, I think that we've covered everything I can think of.
Yeah, I'd have to agree that we've covered a good lot of it.
Yep. I would, and like I said, just be safe, be smart. Another thing I would say too, and we've covered this, this is another important thing. Let someone know where you're going to be at, because if you do get lost or get hurt, at least someone has a general idea of where you're going to be at, so that they can come and find you if they don't hear from you for a while. So those are my most, I would say, two important things that I would pull from this podcast if I were you guys. So, well, everybody, it's been really good having you on the show today. I can't wait to hear more caching stories next week and stuff from your weekend. In your week. So with that, I would say go get them, have fun caching, and thanks. Oh, also, yes, our website is at geocachingpodcast.info, and there you'll also find forums, and Geek Boy says he's going to try to be back next week because he didn't get on this week because his Skype wasn't working. We'll find forums at our geocachingpodcast.info. As you can tell, I'm really ADD. I just go all over the place when I'm talking. So you'll find forums. And also, remember, guys, we have a Twitter account at GC Podcast. And that's Twitter. You can get informed of all other fun stuff like that. And maybe next week we can talk a little bit more about this mystic, cryptic email message that I got from Humphrey over at podcaster.com. And maybe we can figure out a little bit more about that. So with that, thanks for joining us, guys. See you next Tuesday at 9. Some of the music on the show today was provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.